If you could only recommend one book, which would you choose?
I hate this question. This is such...
I know everyone does. That's why I ask. Welcome to A Book and a Dream with Megan O'Russell, an author's adventure in writing, reading, and being an epic fangirl. Hello, and welcome to A Book and a Dream. I am thrilled to have a special guest with us today. We have Lydia Sroff, who is the Book Witch, here to chat with us about her love of audio, her process from working on Wattpad to going to be a published author, and her podcast, which she, you know, interviews the author about their own work and dives into the details of everything with them, which is super cool. So thank you so much for coming to chat with me, Lydia.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Of course. Now, I love connecting with people who have taken different paths to publishing. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like there is this very set mindset that some people have about, like, well, you're going to write a book and then you're going to send it to an agent and then you'll be on the table at Barnes and Noble. So would you mind telling me more about your path of how you chose to start your publishing journey and where you are in it now?
Well, before I dive into that, I want to say that I listened to your trailer for this podcast last night as I was getting ready for bed. And I was floored by the ups and downs of your own personal journey, trying to get to, like, your books out there in the world, and how many of those, like, start and stop and start and stop and, like, two steps forward and five steps back. And I applaud you for continuing, because that shows some real dedication there, because holy potatoes. I mean, yeah, no, that was an intense, like, journey that you've come to your own authorship. Like, wow. For myself, I have a weird relationship with writing. I love storytelling. I've always been a storyteller. But in second grade, I was diagnosed with dyslexia. And they focused really, really heavily on reading. And my problem is more of, like, the processing of phonics. Like, if I see a word, I can't break it down into its components. So all of the words that I have in my head are, at this point, just 35 years of root memorization.
Wow.
And so, and that is okay after so long, but when you're a little kid, you're coming against new words all the time. And so it was very, very frustrating. Spelling in school was terrible. And so I just had this sense of, like, I'm not good at writing and I'm not really good at reading. And so I loved creating worlds and I loved storytelling, but I never thought much on the side of, like, actually writing a book or anything like that.
Sure.
And so kind of, like, fast forward, and the older I got, the more I had a few teachers kind of comment on, you know, the writing that I was required to do for school. And they would be like, this is kind of good. And I had one teacher suggest that I had plagiarized a story.
Oh, wow.
And I took that as a really awesome compliment. but I never thought that I would try and make a book. I dabbled kind of, like, through the end of high school and college, writing every now and then, but I never really showed it to anyone. And then a friend, probably 6-ish years ago, noticed that I was writing a story on my computer. And she said, oh, my daughter is into this Wattpad thing. You should get on Wattpad. And I was like, yeah, the idea of showing my story to someone is terrifying. I'm not going to put it on Wattpad. And she grabbed my computer, hijacked it, sat down, filled out an account, and was like, just start posting your story. And
that's true friendship right there.
Kinda. But it takes you down that, like, that point of like, okay, am I going to do this or am I not going to do this? Yeah. And I thought, what the heck? Fine. I've already got probably a dozen chapters. I'll just kind of start trickling some chapters of this book out. And it gained traction. I mean, it was slow moving, but it was just exciting that people were reading it to begin with. Like,
yeah.
And liking it and commenting on it. And I think that process really helped me to grow and helped me to blossom. And after, I think I was on Wattpad for about 2 or 3 years. And so by the third year, I had a couple books on there. And the first book had reached over 1 million reads.
Wow.
And had shown up on a few different big lists. And I thought, okay, well, if people on Wattpad like it, then I guess I could try and publish it on my own. So I started seeking out how to do that.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny because I feel like things like Wattpad can be such a good leap pad, a way to figure it out. And like, I have so many friends who come to me and they're like, you know, you have all these books. I wish I could be that brave. I wish I could do that. And it's so hard to convince them that, like, okay, maybe you're not ready to, like, be your own indie press. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other paths out there that are available for you to, you know, test the waters, get your feet under you, decide what you want to do. And I think that's amazing. I used Wattpad for, like, publicity purposes, like putting up the first few chapters as samples back in the day. But it's so cool that there's this platform where people can reach millions of readers. That's amazing. And I love that that's there. And I love that it's such a good resource for these people. Now, you are transitioning from Wattpad. And where are you in your current publication journey?
So I didn't anticipate how hard your first book is, and how many, like, ups and down foibles happen. And so after I removed that book from Wattpad, I did send it to an editor to give me feedback, and their feedback their feedback was basically, you got a lot of big ideas in this, but there are two stories that are running side by side, and you need to really figure out what the plot of this book is, because there's too many plots happening, which I think...
Oh, that's harsh.
I think that's pretty typical when you don't really know what you're doing in a book. Yeah, I had a couple plots. I think the editor was like, you got five things happening, which is fine. You can have little plots and then a big plot, but there are two giant plots and you need to figure out what your story is about. So I had to go back to the drawing board. But each time in the process, because I felt like I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't really have a ton of confidence, I think that every time I got kicked with critique, that it took me a while to come to terms with it. That length of time is really shortened as I've gone through this process for multiple rounds now. But it seems that I would get kicked. I would be like, ah, and then I'd run off and write a different book. and then I'd be like, okay, I'm feeling more confident. I'm going to come back to book one. And then I'd get kicked and I'd run off and write another book. So at current, I'm sitting on two first drafts for book two and book three. I have
two additional books that have nothing to do with this story that are just sitting in the drawer. But this book one, I've been working on for years. And finally, I feel I'm at the stage where I am sending it to a big editor, and we are going to start the process of polishing it. And I got a cover artist on board, and I'm really, I feel like I'm closer than I've ever been to publishing book one. And then hopefully the other books just go faster than this book one.
Book one is so hard. And I have like a super thick skin just from being in theater, where being criticized is, you know, what you do all day, every day. But it does take a different kind of callus mm-hmm. on your soul to deal with critique of your book, because it is only you. It's just you in there. You're all by yourself. Mm-hmm. So whether they're critiquing your plotline or your characters or your entire concept, there's like no one else to stand there with you and take it. You're just naked. Mm-hmm. And it can be so hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree.
But as someone who's like gone through the first book process a few times, it does. It gets easier. It really does. And I love that instead of, you know, throwing your hands up and not doing anything with books anymore, you were running to write other projects. You're still working on your art, just, you know, a different aspect of it.
Oh, I love the first draft. I love writing first draft. It's when you kind of sit there and you're like, okay, I want to make this nice enough that I actually can put it out there into the world. Oh man, that means draft after draft after draft after draft after draft. I think I'm sitting on draft 9 is finally being sent to an editor that I'm forking over lots of money to have them do stuff. And that's also a hard pill to swallow. It's the downside of indie. We like to talk about having control, and we like to talk about being able to have the lion's share of the profit. But it is also a luxury. In order to do that, you have to fork over a couple $1,000s minimum to have a product that you can set on the shelf next to a book that has gone through the publishing industry already. And that requires having that money. And so it's hard to make that decision, because you don't know if it's a gamble or if you'll make that money back. And you just have to have the gusto and bravado that you will. So
yeah. So we were talking a little bit before the interview about audiobooks, and you have a very cool relationship with audio because you are a podcaster, which I resisted podcasting for so long because I was like, that's not my medium. I'm a writer. I'm going to blog. But blogs are like dying. But it seems like you took to podcasting really quickly. And I listened to some of the episodes of your podcast, which is The Book Witch. And it seems like it was such a natural thing for you to jump into. How did you decide that you wanted to podcast?
I love talking.
That's a good start. It's a really good start.
I love one-on-one conversations. I wouldn't go so far as to say I'm a strong extroverted person, but I really enjoy having a one-on-one or even a one-on-two, like, deep conversation. I like to skip past all of that small talk and just kind of start picking people apart and asking how, you know, how they're doing on the inside. And so the idea of recording myself for an hour talking to someone about a story that they wrote that I liked, is that just sounds like fun. Like, I mean, the hard part is the editing afterwards, but the talking, I mean, I record for an hour, but we typically go for 2 hours of recording with the authors that I've talked to, like an hour off of the recording, just because it's fun. It's fun to talk to people. And so, I really kind of liked the concept of doing a podcast. I hate the concept of blogging. I do throw up my, every time I put up a podcast episode, I kind of do a little bit of a transcript and I put that on my website. And so it's a quote unquote blog, I guess, in a sense, but that it feels like so much extra tedious work versus just talking to people and then putting it on a podcast.
Honestly, my poor dear sweet husband, I'm like, anyone who's listened to this podcast will know that I am not technologically sophisticated. Like, I do my best, but really it's like me pressing buttons and ruining things. And then my husband like coming in to try and fix it. And so I wanted to put the transcripts for the podcast on my website because the podcast is available everywhere. You can listen to the podcast through my website, but I was like, well, you know, SEO is kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. So I should have like the SEO for the podcast on my website. My poor dear sweet husband was on the phone with Wix like 4 different times trying to figure out how to make it look right so that it's not just like pages of text. And I'm like, I really love you. You're the best. And he's typing in like code. And I'm like, I don't even know how you got that box to appear, let alone what you're doing with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I was like, I just want to like, can I just blog, just type it, click the picture, put it up. It's just,
I mean, technically so you can lots and lots and lots of people, lots and lots of people do. I think what I'm learning though, is that there are so many options for a way to get your entertainment, that there's a subsection of people who just either don't want to, don't have the time, and reading is not going to be the thing that they're going to sit there and pull up. I mean, I got 2 little kids. I don't have time. I barely have time to read my email, but I can have a podcast going on in the background all day long. I can have an audiobook playing while I'm driving on my commute to work and back. So audio is so convenient. And for me, it doesn't become white noise. Like for my husband, he does not like doing audio because it just becomes white noise. And he finds that he's not paying attention to it. And I think that's just the way that different brains work. And so for some, audio is like the next big thing. And that's how, you know, you can easily get your entertainment. For others, not so much the case. And maybe they like reading blogs.
Yeah, I am an actor. Mm-hmm. And I generally like live so close to the theater. My commute's like maybe 7 minutes, which I'm very fortunate. Mm-hmm. No one has a commute that short these days. But to get to other theaters, I end up doing these epic road trips. So like 3 to 5 times a year, I'll end up binging a whole audiobook. But in my daily life, there's not really any time when my ears aren't necessary. Mm-hmm. So I have like a couple podcasts that I listen to religiously. And then a few times a year, I binge audiobooks. But it is so true that like my sister commutes to work. And so she's always like, you have too many books. You write faster than I can read. Like I'm trying, but I'm never going to catch up. And mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. For her, having my books available in audio is going to be so much easier because she has that half hour each way to work mm-hmm. when she can actually consume stories. And I love that because it's not how I enjoy reading, but I know so many people who are like, I want to read it. I want to do it on my commute. Or one of my friends, his brain gets overwhelmed by trying to read too many pages at once. So he's been waiting for audio for forever. And I love that audio opens the world of books up to so many new people. Mm-hmm. It's, It's just fantastic and so easy to do now. Well, not for the narrator, but for the consumer.
Totally.
Now, before the interview started, you said that you were hoping to record the audio for your own books. And how did you decide that that's the way you wanted to go with it, that you wanted to narrate yourself?
I think that because of the podcast, and one of the comments that I get over and over and over again that I find odd is that people like my voice. And so they're like,
I don't think that's odd.
But it's a weird, like, that's not a normal compliment. Like, when you're walking around and you're at the grocery store, no one goes, ooh, I like your voice. Like, that's not a thing that people say, but it's what they say when they listen to you on a podcast.
That is very true. And I have been diving hardcore into audio creation lately. And there is like this weird divide of people who are like, I desperately want the audio to be done by the author. That's my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. And then people who are like, I don't care if it's read by a computer. I just want audio.
Yes. Yes. The audio world. And I know people who will listen to podcasts at like 1.5 speed. Or audio.
It makes me panic. My husband does that and it makes me panic. I can't.
Or audiobooks at 1.5 speed, because to them, it's not about the voice. It's not about the sound. It's about the content, and they want to get the content as quick as possible so they can move on to more content and more content. I can do that with nonfiction sometimes, depending on the nonfiction book. Like if it's more technical, then I can do that. But I like the way that people sound. And so I'm rare to speed up the sound of my audio. I will say though that audiobooks, like good audiobooks, there is a finesse to it. I've not done any sort of drama since high school, but I love drama and I love theater. And so when I'm reading to my kids at night, I find that I do slip into changing my voices for each of the characters. And I do try and, you know, animate the narration. And those things can be really hard, and they're also individual preferences, because you may really love a book and then you listen to the audio and the person who narrates it does a different take on it, and it can turn you off. I think that when the author chooses to do their own book, you kind of already have a sense of what your story should be like, where the highs, where the lows, where the emotions should be put. You don't have total control over that when you hand it over to a separate narrator. So I do really like that aspect of taking it on myself. It is going to be hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of work. I mean, I know that even though when you break down, they say 1,000 words is equals an hour narration. Well, you know, most books are going to be 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours. And then you have all the editing on top of that. So I'm looking at a very big task, but I feel that, you know, I want to give it a shot.
Yeah. I have 17, 18 published books right now. I should probably know that off the top of my head. I don't know. I lost count. It's better just to not anymore. So I'm a huge Joanna Penn of the Creative Penn podcast fan. She's one of the ones that I'm like super dedicated to. It's one of the reasons that I miss serving tables, because I used to get to listen to her podcast while I would like set everything up. And now I don't have that time. After listening to her and, you know, with quarantine and isolation and all those things, I had been meaning to do more audiobooks for a long time. I have one that I put out as sort of a tester in 2019. I recorded it myself, got it. I got it edited. I did all those things and I put it out and I was like, okay, that wasn't the most painful thing in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's not so bad. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there were some more false starts with it, but it really got down to time with creating new works. That's the one thing I can do that no one else can do for me. I can't outsource that.
Yeah.
So it became a balance. And so I've gotten to the point now where I have my Enna Vilbrea series, and that's the one that I'm going to narrate myself because her voice is in my head and I'm never going to be happy with the way anybody else does it. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm an actor. If someone came at me with that expectation, I'd be like, screw you. I don't want to work for you anymore. So I found a lovely gentleman to edit all the audio for me, which is great. That is fantastic to just send the files and then they come back great. But I've been auditioning narrators lately for two of my other series. And it's so weird. It's such a weird thing as an actor, first of all, to have like 50 people send you 5-minute samples of your work. And also to see like what all is out there, especially right now. And I mention this because if any listeners are authors and are currently considering hiring out their audiobooks, this is the time to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in ACX, I have had auditions come through from actors from Utah Shakespeare, Broadway, very famous voiceover, like commercial people. It's amazing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Everyone is trying to find a way to work right now. So if any listeners are, you know, currently seeking narrators, hop on that bandwagon because there are some people available that you will not find once theaters start opening back up. Mm-hmm. I heard a few of the samples and I was like, who is this guy? He's really good. Like, there is no way I can afford him. Mm-hmm. Oh, your summer season of Shakespeare got canceled, sir. Okay, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating. Now, in your hopping back to your podcast after that long audiobook tangent, now you, and I feel like this is so many readers' dream come true to like have a book, read a book, and then like pin down the author and be like, so tell me all the things. So how did you come up with the idea that like that was how you wanted to format your podcast?
I love the idea of being in a book club. And I've never been able to maintain a book club. Like I put
scheduling so hard.
I know, and I get it. People are busy, but a book club just sounds so much fun. And to read a story along with my friends and discuss that story just sounded awesome. And so I kind of I thought, well, I could try and do like an internet book club. Like, if I get people, you know, who want to read the story for a month, and then like the highlight would be to bring on the author and ask them the questions or discuss with them what I would want to discuss in a book club. My only hurdle the biggest hurdle that I thought I was going to have to try and dive over was spoiling the story. and I thought in marketing, we want to tease, but we never want to talk about the big events that happen in a story because we want the people to run off and buy the book. And so I wasn't sure if authors would be down for talking about, you know, all of the nitty gritty of their story. And it turns out that a lot of them were okay with it. So, so it ends up being a lot of fun.
That's amazing. And I got to catch some of your episodes and it sounded from the authors I was listening to that they were really enjoying like finally getting to share like the, well, this is coming from this mm-hmm. and my plan for this is, and that is that is so neat. And like, as an author, it's a very cool concept to be able to sort of like tell people, is there depth of meaning or are the curtains just green? And it's really neat. So I highly recommend checking out the Book Witch podcast if you are the person, the type of reader who likes to dive deep into a story and know, you know, what the green curtains mean or if they're just there to block the sunlight. Definitely check it out, because it is such a cool way to sort of pick apart what's going on in the author's brain. Now, have you had any authors who you've tried to contact who have not been happy to have the spoilers posted?
Not so far. I have reached out to a few bigger fish to ask if they wanted to be on the podcast and just never received a reply. And I was like, okay, that's cool. But the ones that I have had on have just been so excited to be on and to be interviewed about their book. And a lot of them, their plans for big series. And so they either have a book two that has just come out, or a book three that has come out, or they are working on, like, Moira has 7 books planned. She only has the first book, Moira, out, but she's like in the process of currently writing a bunch of them together so that she can send them out 1, 2, 3, 4, like in a faster release than what she's doing right now. And so she's like, I mean, she's like, this is a giant series. And so far, everyone I've talked to has been like, this is a giant series. So they don't mind talking about book one.
I feel like giant series, and I know from an indie author perspective, there is very much this, it's too hard to market a standalone in some ways. Like it's just not worth it unless, you know, you have a big name. And I'm so happy about it because I really don't like standalone books. The only thing I like less than standalone books is when I cave and think I'm reading a standalone book and it is not, in fact, a standalone book, which happened to me twice this year. And I'd get to the end and I'd be like, what's happening? And then, you know, you throw the book and then you instantly regret throwing the book because now its cover is wrinkled. And, you know, we all have those moments. But I love that deep series are becoming more popular right now. And I love that the indie author community really has a huge amount to do with that, because when you have a traditional publisher, like Things I Learned This Week That I Never Knew Before, Twilight was originally written as a standalone.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey.
It was written to be a standalone book, which makes so much more sense now when you look at like what happened in book two and from there.
Yeah.
But it was written as a standalone. And then they were like, well, you're making lots of money, let's expand the series. And I feel like with so many traditional publishers, they don't want to commit to, well, it's going to take me 7 books to wrap up this plot line. They're like, you get 1, maybe 2.
Yeah.
If it goes really well, maybe I'll let you get to 4. And indie authors are just like, nope, I'm just going to write 7 and that's how it goes. And so it's great that that's available now. It's so cool that, you know, indies are reshaping people's reading patterns with readers not even noticing that it's happening.
Well, and I find that to be the case when I hear stories of like, all right, so my first book got picked up, but I wasn't sure if anything more was going to happen from that. So I just wrote a quote unquote standalone with wiggle room in case a book two got picked up. And then a book two got picked up. And then I wrote a second book with a little bit of wiggle room in case. And then 3, 4, and 5 got picked up. And then I had to, you know, figure out the rest of my story. Whereas a lot of the indie books can have just like an ending with so many loose ties. You're just like, wait a minute, when is book two coming? I need to have this book two now.
Yeah, I love that you know, another perk of being indie is that you don't have to wait for the 2-year publishing process. You can rapidly release your books.
Oh yeah.
It's the Netflix generation of reading. We want to binge it. Mm-hmm. We want to go through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I've even had some people like email me and they're like, can you tell me when the release date for the final book in the series is? Cause I'm not starting until then. I'm like, okay, sorry. Sorry. I'll let you know. It's not even set up yet. Or when people are like, when is the 4th book in the series coming? Well, when I write it, I'll let you know. My sister requested, I'm going to be seeing her soon. And she was like, oh yeah, can you bring me a copy of the 3rd book in the Bryan Adams series? And I'm like, well, it's currently 20,000 words long and on my laptop. So no. Not going to happen.
You got to wait not like quite everyone ready yet. Else.
Yeah. So before I let you go, if people are intrigued by the concept of this monthly online book club where they don't actually have to show up Wednesday nights at 6:30 in order to take part, who would you say is a good fit for your book club?
Well, at current, I'd say most of the books that I've been going down have been in the YA or new adult fantasy category. I don't have any qualms with branching out, but apparently that's what I read. So I would say anyone who likes those kind of books. I think we've got the Moira's more cyberpunk. Amber Dragon was very kind of epic fantasy of light and darkness. It was vampires, like the vampires mixed with Studio Ghibli. Like I've kind of run the whole gamut, but yeah.
Perfect. And where can people find you and your podcast?
The Book Witch Club is available anywhere people listen to podcasts, so they can pick it up, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, anywhere. And then they can find me and my newsletter at thebookwitchclub.com.
Perfect. And oh, where can they find your author information too? We definitely want to make sure that people hop on. So when your book is published, they will be there ready to devour it.
Well, I am most active on Instagram at Lydia period S as in Sam, R as in Robert, O, F as in Frank, E as in Edward, because no one can say Srof, and it's okay. My maiden name was Forrester, but I changed it when I married my husband. the link for the Book Witch Club, actually, it takes you straight to lesrof.com, which is my primary website where I have all the info about my books as well.
Perfect. And before I let you go, we are going to do the final 4 questions. So if you could only recommend one book, which would you choose?
I hate this question. This is such...
I know everyone does. That's why I ask.
This is such a hard question. And I still, last night, I was trying to figure out how I wanted to answer this question. And it really boils down to I'm picking 2. You can't stop me.
I'll accept you. I'll accept 2.
So nonfiction, I would recommend hands down Big Magic. It is a beautiful book on creativity and not taking yourself so serious while also recognizing that you can take yourself serious. And it's on my 6-month rotation. I think I listen to that book so often because it fills my soul. So Big Magic, 5-star. And then on the fiction side of things, I'm going to pick Moira from my Book Witch Club podcast because it was such a surprise and a breath of fresh air. It's like I said, a cyberpunk Peter Pan retelling.
Nice.
The author's prose are so unique. When we talk about individual voice. It's a hard concept to really like understand for yourself, but it's easy to pick out when you start reading a unique book. And this is a unique voice and unique writing. And it just, it pulls you through the story so quickly. And I desperately want the rest of them.
I am going to have to check Moira out. Okay, so question two, what song can you count on to pump you up and lift your spirits?
High Hopes by Panic at the Disco. I love that song.
I love it. That's a great choice. Now, what would you want the tagline of your life to be?
I'd rather have a conversation.
Taglines are so small.
They're so micro.
I know. They make you work hard. They really do.
Or people can just talk to me a lot. but I guess, I mean, I kind of tried kicking around. I think I find empathy to be a incredibly valuable thing to hold close to your heart. So I would say search for the empathy in writing and in life.
I love it. And I find that a lot of authors and, you know, storytellers, so actors as well, that is one of the things that you see so strongly in them is that empathy, because they spend so much time telling other people's stories that it sort of it creeps in whether they want it to or not. So I think being an author and a storyteller is definitely right in that niche so well.
Because you got to be in the head of all of your characters. That includes the characters that you want people to dislike. And so it isn't just enough to write the quote unquote bad guy of the story. You have to understand why the story has that character and why they are making those actions. Otherwise, it will just fall flat and people will go, eh, I didn't really care too much that they were the bad guy. So it requires getting in people's heads. And I think that's important in everyday life too, because we don't always have to agree with other people, but if we can understand where they're coming from, then we can make progress instead of just shutting the door.
That is very wise. Look at all the wisdom showing up on the podcast. Okay. Final question. What is the most inspiring thing anyone has ever said to you?
I'm going to take a page from inspiring to keep me going. And that was someone had said that they had stayed up until dawn reading my book. And so they were exhausted. And I was like, wow, you foregoed sleep to read my story. Thank you so much. I guess that means I should keep writing.
That is a great and a meaningful compliment. Well, thank you so much for coming on to chat with us. And I will make sure to put all of the links in the show notes so you can find the Book Witch podcast and Lydia. And I will see you all next time.